The 100 Years' War, the De Guesclin period, the situation in April to May of 1375. The first thing we got to look at is what happened when the delegations went back home. What happened in that basically, those that went to England, to Edward III and his council in the middle of April, the council's response was consistent with the line which the English had taken for many years. They were not prepared to separate the Duchy of Aquitaine from the English crown, nor would they agree that the English king should hold it as a vassal of France. But they were prepared to accept a substantial reduction in its geographical extent by comparison with the vast territories held by the Prince of Wales in its heyday. They were interested in the three-part division of the duchy suggested by the French delegation, under which the part held in full sovereignty by the King of England would have been limited to the area of the southwest, which the English actually currently controlled. Unfortunately, a more absolute line was actually taken in Paris. The French King's Council, its numbers swollen by prominent figures from beyond the royal court, received a report of the conference from the Bishop of Amiens. Philip's tentative compromises received a sour reception, which probably owed something to the presence of his brother, Louis of Anjou. Whatever the dynamics of the assembly, there could be no doubt about the outcome. With one accord, they rejected any solution which left part of French territory in the hands of the English crown, free of homage to the King of France. This effectively marked the repudiation of the three-part division, which the French delegation had itself put forward. It was not the first time that Philip of Burgundy's desire to bring an end to the war had put him ahead of sentiment in Paris, and it would not be the last. Perhaps the English would have given more serious consideration to the idea of settling Aquitaine on a son or a nephew of Edward III if it had not been encouraged to hope for better. As it was, the conference was doomed to failure when it reconvened in May. But, by then, events on the ground had added more problems. Now, going back to Brittany, the army of Brittany had finally embarked from Plymouth at the beginning of April 1375, and they landed a few days later at Saint-Mathieu on the tip of Finster. If John de Montfort expected to find loyalists waiting to rally to his flag, he was quickly disabused. His arrival in the duchy with a foreign army was sullenly received even among his natural supporters, but there was no organized opposition. The defense of Brittany had been left to Olivier de Clisson, with a scratch army of about 300 or 400 men-at-arms formed from the retinues of the leading royalist houses of Brittany, Rohan, Beaumanoir, Rochefort, and Laval. The only major concentrations of French royal troops in the field were around Saint-Sauveur, where Jean de Vennes had about 2,000 men under his command, and on the March of Gascony, where another army, probably rather smaller, was operating under Bertrand de Guesclin. At the time of the English landings, de Guesclin had his hands full. He had just taken the surrender of Sir Diggory Say's castle at Guinquay, the last surviving English enclave in Poitou, and stormed Montreuil-Bonin, a walled town west of Poitiers, which an English company had surprised a few weeks earlier. In the middle of March, Bertrand de Guesclin had arrived at Cognac, by then the only remaining English stronghold north of the Gironde River. John de Montfort's invasion had come 6 months later than planned, but with 4,000 men at his back and several hundred English garrison troops in Brest and Auray, he might have achieved great things even now. The problem was he had more limited strategic view than the English government. His object was to reassert his authority within his duchy. He had no conception of using the largest army currently operating in France for any wider ends. More might perhaps have been expected of his fellow commanders, but the Earl of Cambridge was not a man to press his own views if he had one. The army began by invading the northern part of the peninsula where opposition to John's rule had traditionally been concentrated. The Earl took the small harbor town of Saint-Paul-de-Léon by assault, massacring much of the population. He then marched along the rocky coast, wasting the land as he went. In about the second week of May, after 6 weeks in his duchy, John de Montfort's arrival outside of St. Brooke, a small episcopal town on the north coast whose inhabitants closed their gates against him. St. Brooke was a place of no importance, but the Duke could not face letting the challenge pass, so he laid siege to it. In spite of the enormous size of his army, he failed to make any impression on the place, 2 weeks after beginning of the siege, Jean de Montfort was still patiently pushing mines under difficult territory toward walls while his army sat idly around him. So that is our situation as the Council of Bruges, as the peace talks at Bruges, reopen again in May. Now the sources for this, the Hundred Years' War, the Chronicles by Froissart, the Hundred Years' War by Perrois, the Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and the Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.